It's Tuesday, so it's time for College Football 134 to dive into the Week 10 that was and preview the Week 11 that will be before looking for some value for the weekend. That is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer. Andrew, we are recording a couple hours early this Tuesday. You doing me that favor so I can slip off to work at the election polls. All that really means is we should be in our listeners' podcast feeds a few hours early this afternoon.
So hopefully you're listening to it while you're standing in line to vote if you haven't voted already. Just go vote. Please go vote.
You come near making me angry though. You know what? I'm gonna start us off with a little bit of frustration, if I may.
Do it.
Because we're not gonna discuss the Tuesday night action games. We're not gonna discuss the Tuesday night action games at all. Because Andrew, I would like to think we know how much I appreciate all levels of college football. I am on here regularly discussing the dredges of the Sun Belt, noting when non-elite FCS teams physically dominate Kent State. I know exactly how far it is from UTEP to New Mexico State. This is who I am. But there should not be matching tonight. There should not be any games. There should not be any practices. 2020 was not that long ago. Remember when the NCAA prohibited any countable athletically related activities on Election Day? That was to encourage players to vote, to encourage players to get involved in voting sites. And by 2022, that rule was voided because college football coaches threw a hissy fit in 2021. Sure, only four MAC teams play tonight, but every team is practicing. So those coaches' preciously planned weeks are not disrupted. These players are going from a day of classes straight to the football facility. By the time they get out, polls are closed. Could they have voted early? Yes. Did they? Most people don't. It's not that complicated. Most people don't. I doubt the players did. The NCAA got exactly one and only one thing right in the last 4 years. And then it folded on that because Lincoln Riley, Dabo Swinney, and Nick Saban would rather their players not be actively engaged. Football only. Dabo emphasized that today, this Tuesday, by conjuring up a story that he couldn't vote, when in reality, he simply faced the same obstacle I've faced for 17 years. When a relative has the same name as you, you better be clear on your birthday and clear on your address when you go vote. Dabo, he voted. He's not saying that as loudly. He just wants to inspire headlines about voting conspiracies. He would rather muddy the day than encourage an understanding of the day, encourage his players to partake in the day. Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, and Lincoln Riley claim to be ignorant and or ambivalent about politics. It's not a feature of college football. It's a failure of those persons. And now they're demanding the same of their players with the NCAA's willing assistance. I love Maction. Tonight's Maction should not be on the docket. I could continue ranting on that, but I have to keep us moving so I can go work the afternoon shift at the polls. I'll obviously miss all of Maction tonight.
I faded Ball State a little bit, so we can just move on real quick.
You know, that's the appropriate response to me ranting. Before we keep moving, podcast verbs, everybody, please go subscribe to College Football 134 on all your podcast platforms. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it, thank it, verbs, serves, verbs. And now, best way to look at last week is to apply its lessons moving forward. Ohio State 20, Penn State 13. You know what we're already forgetting? At least I'm already forgetting. Penn State led that game 10-0.
Yep. Watching that game, I was like, okay, early on, Ohio State's defense was fine. Obviously, the only way that Allen was moving the ball was through these little flare passes to Nick Singleton, and he was just doing his thing on the outside, but he was not attacking over the middle very well. That Ohio State defensive line does what it does and got a lot of pressure on him. And Ohio State was like, they came out and they were like, hey, we're just going to try to huck on this Penn State defense early, and it was not being effective. And then Chip Kelly made an adjustment where he was like, okay, we're going to spread these guys out, but then we're going to hand the ball off and run up the middle. Cause when you spread out that Penn State defensive line, it's much easier to attack. And that's exactly what happened. Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins were both effective in that sense. And it didn't need to be a Will Howard game. I'm pour one out for you. I'm sorry for your Will Howard anytime touchdown bet. That was one of the worst beats of the weekend. But yeah, it was a good effective game plan by Kelly. It's kind of what we expected from a performance like you expected. This is your national championship ticket. That was the kind of performance we expected. And Drew Aller wasn't him. That's my emphasis for making that bet. It was Drew Aller wasn't him. His yards per attempt were very bad. He just obviously didn't have much time in the pocket, but he needed to be better than he was. I don't know if that was because his injury kind of like flared up as the game went on. But
if you're playing, you got to be better. That's
exactly. He needed to be better. And it's the same old story with James Franklin at this point.
You mentioned James Franklin, and I'm going to go on the other side of the ball. I don't want to be the one giving Ryan Day too many flowers here, but there's a toughness to this Ohio State team. You go down 10-0 on the road against a somewhat of a rival, and then to reel off 20-3, these adjustments you mentioned, Will Howard, yes, that anytime touchdown, that really turned what could have been a really nice weekend for me. But Will Howard responds, I mean, an egregious, embarrassing pick six, and he buckles down. Will Howard showing some toughness. This Ohio State team, I'm really looking forward to that Indiana game in 2 weeks, and should Ohio State win that Big Ten rematch against Oregon. I know you think Oregon is a cut above at this point, or at least as of last week you thought that, and they didn't do anything to prove that. But Ohio State, they look every bit the part, in my opinion. To come back from a 10-0 deficit on the road like that, that's really something that inspires more confidence out of me.
And you said you don't want to give Ryan Day his flowers, and we can kind of not do that because what – in a sense, we can and we can't, but the best thing he maybe have done recently is hire Jim Knowles to run that defense and then hire Chip Kelly to run that offense. And so you give him the flowers in a sense, but he's made the decision-making with two smart football guys. They're given the smart decision-making to two smart football guys.
Hey, that's part of the job. Part of the job is hiring good coordinators. Some of the best coaches simply have the best coordinators. I'm critical of Dabo Sweeney today, but his peak Clemson run, he held on to the same coordinators all those years, and that really helped Clemson stay at that level. As soon as those coordinators were gone, we've seen Clemson drop off a little bit, and maybe those things are related.
100%. And sorry if you – I'm glad this is mostly audio recordings, but if there's a clip, I just definitely did a kissy face to the camera there. My wife just handed me my baby monitor as she runs out real quick. I do love you, Douglas. I do love you, but that was not directed at you. So please let's not clip that, producer Jameson.
We don't usually focus on blowouts in our games of the week recap, but SMU 48, Pittsburgh 25 needs to be acknowledged in part because you and I need to trust ourselves more. We both sat here at our computers. Was that a couple Thursdays ago, a couple Fridays ago, scoffing at how fraudulent Pittsburgh was. And then neither one of us had the courage to bet SMU this weekend.
It was the Syracuse game where they put up 21 points on all those pick sixes. And we both sat there in our chat and we were like, this Pitt team is super fraudulent. And then neither of us picked them. And what did they do? They proved us right without us putting our money where our mouth was, which is just annoying more than anything else.
I like being right. I like being right more when I make money off being right.
Yeah. I like proclaiming things that turn out to be right, not proclaiming things and then cowarding away afterwards. It was tough. But it was not much analysis here, right? Like, it was pretty much
I want to give a quick ACC update here. If SMU wins out, they're versus Boston College at Virginia versus Cal. SMU is into the ACC title game. And Miami, you win out. You go to Georgia Tech this weekend, then host Wake Forest and finish the year at Syracuse. That's our ACC title matchup.
Okay.
I look at those, and later on in a different conference, I'm going to say, well, that team's probably not going to win out. Both these teams should win out. BC, Virginia, Cal, Georgia Tech, Wake, Syracuse, they should win. Like, those are not even coin flippy. Those are not maybe that. Those are clear, distinctive. SMU and Miami will be hefty favorites.
So, what do you think the projected line should be for that ACC title matchup? You're trying to find it right now.
I'm going to ponder it real quick. Give me if I could get my screen to focus. There we go. Miami 5.5 to 6.5.
5.5 to 6.5. Okay. Well, SMU right now is +130 to make the college football playoff. So they have to win, though, right? Like, they have to win the ACC championship to get in. So what would you rather? Would you rather bet SMU to win the ACC championship game or make the playoff at +130?
I am going to give it an insight into process here and explain how I'm answering that. I know Minnesota is a 6-point favorite this weekend. So I just pulled up that game in particular to check money lines. And Rutgers, Minnesota's at Rutgers. Rutgers is a +185, +190 underdog. So if my line is correct, that SMU should be a 5.5 to 6.5 point underdog, you're going to get better value on the SMU money line than that +130.
There you go. So that's what I would lean towards as well. So
There are people who know the money line spread correlation off the top of their head. I don't, but it's a pretty easy and relatively accurate shortcut to just go find a game with that spread this weekend. And no, there's going to be some variance, but that'll give you a baseline number.
Yeah. So there you go. I really like that little process breakdown we did there.
One more game to recap from last week before we keep moving. Houston 24, Kansas State 19. This one cost me some personal money. Houston's touchdown drives were 55 yards, 53 yards, and 9 yards in a downpour. Kansas State really botched it, and now Kansas State needs some help to make the Big 12 championship game.
I don't want to get into this too much right now because I think we're going to talk about the bracket here in a few seconds, but Big 12 is just a mess. It is a mess right now. But obviously, that's a game Kansas State should not end up losing. Like Iowa State puts up a ugly result this week as well. Like I don't want to. Yeah, we'll talk about it in a second here. So,
well, here we're going to talk about that, folks. That is literally the next item on our outline. So we're just going to move straight into it. I will tell you right now, the Big 12 scenarios are: Iowa State, you went out and you're still in against BYU. If Iowa State loses, Colorado is in. Now, Colorado, I think, will lose a game yet this year. Texas Tech, Utah, Kansas, Oklahoma State. Probability-wise, Colorado is going to lose another game. And if Colorado loses another game, then the winner of Farmageddon will make the Big 12 title game against BYU. Iowa State, Kansas State, to close the year, has never had these kinds of stakes. And yes, Andrew, on our outline, we're going to do a quick playoff conversation. The way we're going to do this, I put out a bracket every Sunday, and then there's a bit of an update on Wednesday mornings. My bracket is there. I can rattle it off for our listeners. You're going to tell me which teams you disagree with. Now, my bracket, just Georgia, Ohio State, Miami, and Iowa State are my teams with byes. And then 5 through 12, I've got Oregon, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, Indiana, BYU, Alabama, Boise State.
Disagree Alabama. That's the big one for me. I can't see... As long as Tennessee doesn't get blown out by Georgia, like Tennessee can obviously win that game against Georgia, but as long as it's not a blowout, I can't conscientiously put Alabama above Tennessee in that playoff. What say you about Alabama there?
I think the workaround will be that Alabama beat Georgia, Georgia beat Tennessee, Tennessee beat Alabama. All of those get voided in that head-to-head-to-head kind of conversation, and okay. Alabama's otherwise season is better than Tennessee's.
Is it losing to Vanderbilt is better than anything else Tennessee has lost? Wow. Like I know I'm Diego Papia's number one fan, but the committee isn't. Like I know the committee doesn't respect Vanderbilt the way you and I respect Vanderbilt. Like that's just a fact. And I also don't. So I'm gonna say BYU is in that fourth spot. They're the most consistent thing I've seen in the Big 12 right now. I think only one Big 12 team is getting into the college football playoff at this point, unless somebody really shows me something. And that for me is BYU. They're good. They'll ride that defense. They'll win out. They'll get that 4 seed, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, BYU for me, which means no second Big 12 team and getting in then.
You can get both Tennessee and Alabama in that instance.
I guess you can get Alabama in then. I still think there's hope for Clemson a little bit if they don't have a good shot at all. Fair enough.
I want to, on your Big 12 point, to me it is Iowa State will be favored against BYU in the Big 12 title game. Iowa State, yeah. I'm saying Iowa State will also be the home team in Farmageddon. Now, that's me putting Iowa State there at the 4 seed is effectively a 2-game parlay if Iowa State wins both of those. But this is a projection that I've got to do every week. I'm going out on that limb. Iowa State will be favored in both those games. To our previous point, you kept moving before I could pull up the schedules to confirm in my head. Yes, Tennessee is a lesser schedule than Alabama. You can say Alabama lost to Vanderbilt. What's a worse loss? Losing to Vanderbilt or losing to Arkansas? It is the year 2024. Don't give me your traditional takes. Vanderbilt is good.
Vanderbilt's good, yeah, but Arkansas is not bad. Like it's not a bad team, and I don't care that they got just blown out by Mississippi this weekend. Like I don't think Arkansas is bad by any sense of the meat. Like they are a middle rung SEC team this year. Like they can beat some teams. It's not like it's, they are not a Vanderbilt of the Vanderbilts we are used to sort of thing.
Whereas in this scenario, Alabama will have won at LSU. I think that's the big difference between Alabama and Tennessee. Tennessee's best win in this scenario, aside from Alabama, and I already pointed out that that can kind of get ruled out via that Georgia three-way head-to-head. Tennessee's best win otherwise will conceivably be Vanderbilt. Like Tennessee doesn't have good wins aside from Alabama. I'm not trying to diminish that win, but it gets countered by Alabama beating Georgia. That's why I continue to put Alabama in before Tennessee.
So does the can we maybe say that the LSU Alabama winner gets in then? Is that on the table?
That is very much on the table. And at that point, we should just charge forward into our coming week. Look at you. The segue is without even intending. Look at you. let's charge forward. Let's issue the Saturday morning reminder that we will be live 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube channel every Saturday, including this Saturday, to discuss the entire week's slate. I'm going to flip the order on our outline because you just mentioned that Alabama LSU game. That's 8 Eastern on ABC. As of now, Tuesday afternoon, Alabama is a field goal favorite. To me, I am staying away from this game, aside from pointing out it's a Saturday night in Death Valley. Brian Kelly hasn't lost on a Saturday night in Death Valley. Brian Kelly upset Alabama in his debut season at LSU on a Saturday night in Death Valley. That was that two-point conversion pick play. Notre Dame fans will remember it because Brian Kelly ran it at Florida State in 2014 and got flagged for offensive pass interference. Just a slight wrinkle to make it more palatable in the officials' eyes. Beat Alabama 2 years ago in this exact same spot.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. I'm staying away. Like I know that we saw Alabama just crush Missouri, but we talked about that a few weeks ago. It was a weird situation where Missouri was really banged up. The game was close, and then Brady Cook left the game, and then the game was no longer close pretty much instantly the second he left the game. LSU with that tough loss to coming off that tough loss to Texas A&M, obviously. But I still feel like in this situation, Alabama gives me more worries at this point. Like Alabama's results, they're the more inconsistent team at this point, I think is the long and short of it. Like they still rely on explosive plays more than most teams. The LSU, you know what you're getting with LSU and Nussmeier. The running game is the defense has been much improved the last few weeks. I think I know what I'm getting with LSU more than I am with Alabama at this point. There's too much of a range in variance from Alabama. And when you mix in the Saturday night at Death Valley, then you're like, oh, this game is going to be much closer than maybe some people think.
I see what you're saying. My phrasing would be slightly different. It's not that they're more consistent. It's that the trend lines are almost – LSU has pretty consistently trended up this season. It started out – and which I'm saying, it started out not great. But it has progressed in the way you want a team to progress throughout the season, whereas Alabama hasn't maintained – if anything, Alabama peaked – before halftime against Georgia and is very gradually trended down. I'm going to add a bet live. I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Let's go.
This one's not even a banner yet. I'm putting it in right now. I'm going to take the LSU money line against Alabama. To heck with the banner. LSU money line against Alabama. I'm seeing plus 124 at DraftKings right this moment. Saturday night in Death Valley, your point about Alabama inconsistency, and in my head, that emphasizes that LSU has been trending the correct direction. Best bet, LSU plus 124 against Alabama this weekend.
So 124, is that... Okay, yeah, that's the best line I see out there right now. I was just going to give you a double check real quick. I agree with you. 124 is the best I see as well.
Outstanding. We will add that to my ledger for the week. And we're going to go to a game where I think I have a hunch you're going to be putting down a best bet. Georgia at Mississippi. Georgia is only a 2.5-point favorite Saturday afternoon on ABC. I really thought the books would give more deference to Georgia just because it's Kirby Smart against Lane Kiffin. So I am intrigued by that number up to 3.5. I am simply betting on Georgia's past years compared to Mississippi and Lane Kiffin. Mississippi's offense is not looking like it should. Carson Beck is struggling, clearly, but I'm giving more faith to that Georgia program than Lane Kiffin's program.
Oh, 100%. And we are coming up. This is, I saw, so let's just, I'm just going to get right into it. Best bet. This is our SEC first half under of the week. Total, I believe, is sitting at 55.5 for this matchup.
I've seen 54.5.
54.5. Okay. Still, that is just, I think that's just an overreaction to what Mississippi did last week. They've been putting up their 60, whatever, 60 burger against Arkansas. And I still don't like this. This was 100% a Lane Kiffin. I am running up the score on Arkansas and I do not care. Like this was obviously Arkansas got down early and they looked like they quit in that football game. And it was like, they were up 30 in the fourth quarter and they were still hucking 60 yard bombs down the field. Like Lane Kiffin was like, we're getting ours today. I don't care what anybody says. And that's what they did. I still really don't have a ton of faith that this, like, just because you put up all those points against Arkansas doesn't mean I think you're automatically going to be doing it here against Georgia. It's just a different beast. And the offense has still struggled in SEC play. There was still no Trey Harris in that last game. He was a game time decision, did not end up playing in that one. Not having him against, like, you can get away with not having him against Arkansas, but that will be a little different against this Georgia defense. Two top 10 teams in terms of defense, both in the top 10 in defensive success rate. I still harp on the fact that Mississippi's best unit right now is its defense. We talked about Carson Beck struggling. Trevor Etienne is also banged up. Poor one out for one of my bets on the weekend. it was looking good, and then he no longer played, and then the backup cashed the number on his own. I think this is a game where both offenses could struggle early. So under 27.5 minus 114 over at FanDuel there. It seems too obvious almost to me.
The only counter I would come up with, and I'm not endorsing this, I'm just trying to play a moment of devil's advocate, is Kirby knows they've got to win this. And if there's ever a moment where Kirby might, it's what I call the kitchen sink against Texas. And we saw it show up as the kitchen sink early against Texas. Maybe Kirby does something similar in this moment just because it is losing and Georgia's out of the playoff. Frankly, I do believe any two-loss team that's not in their conference championship game needs to think they're out of the playoff to our Clemson discussion earlier. Yeah. So maybe Kirby comes at it with that mentality. I'm not taking that over, but I'm saying that would be the only counter I can offer up to you.
For sure. Yep.
That is going to be our short and abridged games of the week preview because those two games are so far above all the others. But that's what Saturday mornings are for, 9 a.m. Eastern time. We will be live on the Covers YouTube channel. We will tweet it out endlessly. So come join us and we will go through much more of the slate then, as long as Andrew promises to get up early with me.
I promise. I'll be there, buddy.
Now, close listeners will notice while we did bet on both of those, we don't usually bet on all the biggest games of the week because that's not necessarily the biggest value. Gambling on college football needs to focus on finding value. I found value last week, although it went against me. Duke and Army were nonsense betting losses for me that turned a decent week into an ugly one. The Michigan team total hit the over, only courtesy of a special teams fumble. Those are the breaks. I went 3-6-1, down 3.4 units last week. I am back in the arrears, 8 units down on the season, 38-44-1. I stand by every choice I made last week, and I think if you watched the games, you'd agree with me.
Yeah, there wasn't too many that you felt like that were really, really rough. The only one I felt really rough about last week, in a week in which I went 3-6 for negative 2.62 units, the trend continues of hot week, cold week for me. And now we're down. We're at 36-46 on the year, down 13.27 units. It's tough, but we're gonna climb out of that hole 1 week at a time here. Only one that I really felt really bad was that Arkansas Mississippi under, which obviously went over just by Mississippi.
Mississippi
on their
hit
own.
That over on them on their own, didn't they?
They hit the over on their own there. A little rough in that sense, but. It was nice to see a Surface Academy under hit again. And like I said, the Trevor Etienne, I had the rushing yards on him and he was doing fine. And then the backup comes in and runs all over Florida in the second half, which feels like it should have been Etienne yards if he was able to go. So that's a little tough one, but that's just college football for you. Other than that, I wasn't too upset with too many of the plays. Illinois, they had a chance there to play pretty well there, to pull out that game against Minnesota, and they didn't. But overall, feeling pretty good.
Start us off this week, because I know you are going to lean into the not Tuesday night, shameful Tuesday night. You're going to lean into another portion of the midweek slate.
Yeah, that's what it's been really good for college football this year, because, or at least midweek viewing. Other conferences have leaned into the early week, so we haven't had to wait all season for our midweek action. But yeah, it starts this week. We're going to start by looking at Wednesday night's matchup between Ohio and poor old Kent State. They are the 134 of our 134 in college football, 134 at this point. And I'm going with Parker Navarro to get 75 plus rushing yards at plus 110. That's over at Bet365. Now, Ohio is a team that had a lot of transition this year, but they've responded well to it. And a lot of the reason for that is because of Navarro. He's a dual threat quarterback. He's thrown for 1,200 yards. So he gets a little interception happy at times, but he's also their second leading rusher with 508 yards and 6.2 yards per carry. He's been really, really getting going in MAC play. He has at least 11 carries in four straight games, and he's gone over this number in three of those four games. The one game he didn't go over was against a very good Miami of Ohio defense, and I quickly mentioned there Kent State is not Miami of Ohio. They are 134 of college football, 134 in EPA margin, 133 in defensive EPA margin. They are 131st in defensive success rate, 134th in EPA per rush. So Parker Navarro, 75 plus rushing yards on Wednesday night.
I was at least subtle when I took my shot at Kent State to start this show. You're just going to lean into it over and over again. I mean, it's all accurate. It's all deserved, but whew, tough break for the Golden Flashes.
Hey, they give us opportunities. We just take them.
They have given us plenty of opportunities. All right, let me go to a Saturday game. I believe this is a noon kick. I am going to make it quick and easy and ask the question, what would the narrative around Minnesota be if Big Ten referees had not gotten a penalty call so wrong at Michigan at the end of September that the next day the conference announced a rule change? The Gophers could be on a 5-game winning streak, covering the spread in all 5 of them. I see a team here that is not getting the proper appreciation because in part of that call. I'm taking Minnesota by 6 at Rutgers. The key here is running back Darius Taylor. He's averaging 24.6 touches per game in this stretch, 5.2 yards per touch. He started the season injured. If you remember, he missed that barn burner North Carolina game that I went to in person, and it was just miserable in the rain and an absolute delight to experience. He started the season injured. He's rounding into form, and now he's going against the Rutgers rushing defense that, let's see here, number 103 in EPA per rush against, number 122 in rushing success rate. Darius Taylor is going to churn through the Rutgers defense, and that's some of it is because Rutgers is just getting the injured reserve there is piling up. But I'll take that value. I'll take Minnesota by 6, available at -109 at Bet Rivers, largely keyed by Darius Taylor.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. Okay, next up. We're going a little sick here again. We're gonna keep this by going back to the Sun Belt. And you saw this one and you're like, what are you doing? Basically, we're going Georgia State, James Madison. Over 53.5 minus 114 at FanDuel. Now, this is actually about Georgia State. This is a Georgia State fueled bet here. this comes back to watching midweek college football games. I had a bet on AJ Turner a few weeks ago and watched every down of Marshall play Georgia State. And something happened in that game where Georgia State made a switch at quarterback to Zach Gibson. And he's been the quarterback ever since. He's completing 69% of his passes for 690 yards with 5 touchdowns and 1 interception. So you may go look at that Georgia State schedule and you've seen, oh, they've lost 6 games in a row and they're sorry, 5 games in a row. And they are 1-3-1 against the spread. They're giving up a bunch of points, but if you look at the offense, they've scored 20, 26, and 27 points in those games, and they've gone 2-0-1 to the over in those matchups because Gibson has been giving them something to believe in on offense, which is a big difference. Obviously, James Madison's defense is solid, but the other only other question for me here would be James Madison's offense. I don't think they have to really worry about being inconsistent. It looks like they can put up 60 one week and then 14 the next. Georgia State is not going to put up a very strong front against them, 122nd in success rate. I think James Madison, who also plays much better at home, shouldn't have too much trouble scoring in this one, while Georgia State continues to do just enough to help us go over this number of 53.5.
I like it. I like it a lot. When I first saw you had this play, I wasn't saying, oh, what are you doing there? I was saying, like, this is a play I understand. It's a little bit sicko, but I understand it. Parker's got this total at 56. Okay. For me, it's mostly that James Madison's going to do whatever they want. James Madison might pull the Mississippi this week and hit the over on their own, this time to your benefit. I really doubt Georgia State's defense. And so, yes, the Georgia State improving offense creates the value here. The Georgia State dismal defense needs to be underscored and remembered, and that helps your over, obviously.
Yes, 100%. What do you got for us next there, Douglas?
I'm going to be cruel and cynical and unapologetic because this is life. Sometimes quarterbacks get hurt, and sometimes two quarterbacks get hurt, and sometimes your third quarterback is an Ivy League walk-on. What do you want me to do? Not take the value of Florida going to Texas with a former Yale quarterback starting at quarterback? DJ Lagway's hamstring injury, Billy Napier is projecting optimism. DJ Lagway got carted off the field.
Yep.
He's not going to come back against Texas. If he comes back against Texas, he's not going to look good. He's not going to be doing the DJ Lagway things. Florida's offense is doomed against Texas. Team total under 13.5, -112 at FanDuel. At best, Florida's going to shut this game down. Billy Napier knows his job status. He knows, we're doing okay, better than expected, maybe. But he also knows he can't get blown. He can't lose this game 56-7. Billy Napier is going to try to shut this game down, slow play it, run the ball a bunch to try to keep it optically closer. It's not going to help them score. Their only chances of scoring are broken plays, blown coverages. He's going to run this game. Now, Texas has a great run defense. This is not going to work out. But all of this is gamesmanship and trying to maintain employment. When you don't have DJ Lagway, I don't see any way for Florida to attack this game. I have also considered the total, anything under 40, anything 45.5, I'm taking the under. But in this instance, I want to take the Florida team total under 13.5. It's a doubt entirely of the Gators offense, obviously.
Of course. Shout out producer Jameson.
I wasn't doing it to be cruel. I really wasn't. I didn't even think about it. I'm not.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, it's
unapologetic.
I don't think Lagway's playing in this game, and I love this Texas defense so much. So it's tough for them. It's gonna be tough.
All right, I think I know where you're going next, and I just want on the record that I disapprove.
You disapprove. Okay. I'm very conflicted right now.
You're not conflicted, folks. He's smiling. It's an ear to ear grin. I'm conflicted. You're not conflicted. You're gleeful.
I am because this is a Utah pod. It is. But that was contingent on Cameron Rising being a living, breathing, on the football field playing quarterback. And that is not the case. So my heel turn pick of the week. We're going Utah team total under 17.5 for the Holy War as they head to take on BYU. I've seen enough of Isaac Wilson. I've I've seen enough. Like it's really, really ugly for this Utes offense right now. They have not topped 20 points in their last four games. 10 points against Arizona, 19 points against Arizona State, 7 against TCU, and 14 against Houston. And now they get to go up against a BYU defense that's been really, really scrappy. They can get beat on explosives a little bit, but Isaac Wilson is not explosive. The Utah offense is not explosive. So I am not worried about this at all. We're going Utah under 17.5 points here. This is, I feel bad. I do. That national championship ticket is just so dead and gone. Every time I bring up my book where it sits, I just sit there and stare at it for a minute and then just move on with my day.
That's the flaw of no longer always having paper tickets, because I can't crack the joke. Have you lit like a candle with that ticket yet? Like, I can't crack that. It's because you can't do that with a cell phone screenshot.
No, you can't.
The one thought I have here is you can make this heel turn pick of the week and Utah can win. Utah could win this. Parker and I talked about this already. Utah could win this game 9-6, and we all just laugh. We laugh and be joyful and enjoy the chaos that
it would be. It would be the absolute peak of the Big 12 this year. It'd be peak Big 12 and totally expected. Like, I have a little faith in BYU because everything they've done has been so consistent, and they've been the only team in the Big 12 that has kept their cool and has done what they're supposed to do. And they're not getting exponentially better, but they are just doing their jobs and they're doing it well. And so when you have any bit of consistency in this crazy Big 12, that's kind of an edge up. And yeah, so I'm leaning towards BYU. I almost took them laying, I'm seeing 3.5s out there now. Almost took that as well, but it's in Utah. Like it's at night. Like, this is also kind of our Pac-12 after dark Memorial game of the week as well. Like, it's crazy things happen. The Big 12 has been as crazy as they come. So I just couldn't pull the trigger on laying the points with BYU.
I want to once again reiterate, you can cash this bet and Utah can win. So it's not that much of a heel turn. You want to see a heel turn, Andrew? You want to see a heel turn? South Carolina by 3.5 at Vanderbilt. Put it on the board is my best bet. South Carolina by the field goal on the hook at Vanderbilt. I'm getting that at -106 at FanDuel. That's a heel turn.
You're a cold, cold man. Cold. Cold Douglas. But I will say this. South Carolina needs a win to get bowl eligible. Vandy is already. If there is a letdown spot for this Vanderbilt, we have credited Vanderbilt all season long for being a team that has not had that letdown spot, that have given it. They're giving it their all every single week. But if there was a spot for a letdown spot, it's this one, because they did just become bowl eligible last week. And Diego Pavia is pretty banged up at this point. Like, he is gutting out games right now. And if they wanted to be like, hey, we're not going to run you so much this game to get you ready for a big bowl matchup this year, like, that's maybe what they'll do. I wouldn't be shocked.
No, I'm not making this bet because South Carolina needs it for bowl eligibility. South Carolina's got Wofford coming down the pipe here weekend before Thanksgiving. South Carolina's going to go to a bowl game. They're going to beat Wofford. All due respect, but it's going to happen. I'm making this bet because Diego's worn out, and South Carolina's defensive line might be the best havoc-causing defensive line in the country. That defensive line is going to bother Diego Pavia, and to me, that's enough. Defensive line, Diego Pavia, I'm with you most of the time on Diego. I really am. But that defensive line should render him far less effective. South Carolina, by a spread as short as 3.5, gave it to me. That's how
he is banged up. There's no doubt. Like, that's another game. I've been watching so much Vanderbilt football this year. It's crazy. But like, he looks not 100% right now.
That is it for our best bets. We're now going to throw to – I actually recorded with Parker Fleming on Monday, a byproduct of me needing us to record earlier today. So we're going to drop in those 15 minutes of chaos. And I want to note, Parker had 3 bets. 2 of those lines have moved in the last 21 hours, but 1 by only a hook, and 1 actually went against Parker. So when you hear that conversation, know that as of Tuesday afternoon, Cincinnati is a 5-point favorite. Duke is still a 3-point underdog, and Iowa is now a 5.5-point favorite. And now we've got good friend Parker Fleming joining us. Parker, I'm going to tell the people the loud thing quietly here. You are helping me out, doing me a favor, and you and I are recording this Monday afternoon rather than Tuesday afternoon usually. But these numbers, whatever numbers you throw at me, they probably won't move much in the next 24 hours. Monday, Tuesday is usually a quiet part of our week.
They'll probably move the opposite direction of whatever I say here. So this is kind of like anti-advice here.
Well, if that's the case, I will note that while I record with Andrew tomorrow on Tuesday. And this will then hit the interwebs Tuesday.
My favorite part of being in a gaming space is giving out stale lines and then counting them as winners. So you know me.
I look forward to, you know, we're gonna hope for the opposite. You're going to give me some ideas here, and they're going to just explode in the next 24 hours, and people will just have to take us at our word that you were ahead of the curve.
Love that. Love that a whole bunch. I've got two favorites and an underdog here. So one of them is a little spicy. The other two, I think, are kind of the good kind of boring here and what we're looking at. So if you just want to start with one of these, I like Sensi. I think I've said this before that I was very low on them as a program, and it does feel like they've turned the roster and gotten some guys in there, and looks like they are very solid on both sides of the ball. 27th in EPA per play on offense, 32nd in EPA per play on defense. And West Virginia, they brought in Nico. Maybe there's a little bit of shot in the arm. Neil Brown, with his back against the wall, has, you know, won some games here and there, but that defense is still 78th and 122nd in EPA per dropback, Douglas. 122nd. I am not making a mistake there. I think Cincinnati is the more complete, balanced team on both sides. They have a level of physicality West Virginia can't compete with, and West Virginia's got to go on the road. I like the Bearcats here. I think you could see that as a 4, 4.5 at some places.
I do see a lot of 4.5s on the board for the Cincinnati Bearcats. I understand that play. I like the point you make right out of the gates. Cincinnati has somehow found a program. We all kind of scoffed at the Scott Satterfield hire. I mean, Louisville was glad to see him go. That's always a questionable decision when a program at a similar level is happy to see their coach go, and as you take him off your hands. And yet here we are with Cincinnati genuinely in the mix this year.
And again, just kind of like as this, insofar as the Big 12 has been a smash mouth league, they're a team that's kind of poised to do that and be pretty consistent, really good at defensive special teams. They're first in field position allowed. So just doing some of the fundamentals well, good for them. I like this up to about 8 points. So anything under the touchdown, I'm going to feel great at here. So I like Cincy as a big favorite on this one.
We joke about stale lines, and here you are saying I'll take Cincy neg 4.5, and I'll enjoy it up to neg 6.5. We've got some cushion here, Parker.
I think as long as you're on the side of that number, I think you're going to be okay inside of that touchdown there. Another number that made me scratch my head a little bit. It feels like there's some buying into NC State as a resurgence, maybe Duke with some letdown kind of physicality beat body blow effect maybe against Miami last week, obviously with a huge lead and then not even covering, a super super rough break for Duke there. But Douglas, I don't think this is going to be a hot take. NC State does not have the offense that Miami has, and even as they've been moving along pretty well the last couple of weeks with Morris and trying to figure things out, they are still in the 70s in efficiency here. That Duke defense is one of the best units in the country. I feel comfortable saying that. They're a legitimate top 25, very, very solid unit on defense. They are 20th in EPA per dropback. Should be very, very disruptive against NC State. I think Duke can put together four quarters here, and NC State does not have another gear. So I like Duke as the underdog to keep this thing close at a minimum. Might even get a little fun and sprinkle a little pizza money on a money line straight up. I have them favored straight up, but I'll happily take some points there with Duke. I think I see that at +3 right now.
You not only have them favored straight up, and I know you always caution, your score projections are the loosest part of your graphs. They are, while they hold value and guide you here, you're not really saying necessarily with firmness that Duke is going to win 32-28. But yeah, you've got Duke projected not only to win straight up, but to win by more than they are as an underdog.
Yeah. Which I always, I think that's informative and it's good to look at. Kind of to put Occam's razor on it, I always think I'm missing something. If that's the case, if the numbers spit out something there, I'm missing some key information about the weather or about a player who's not going to play or something like that. But, looking at this Duke NC State matchup, I'm not really seeing anything other than I just like Duke's defense more than I think the market does. And I don't believe NC State is really buying, I'm not really buying back into an NC State resurgence here down the stretch.
I'm very much with you, and so is the market. This number opened at plus 4.5, and now Monday afternoon, it's already down to an even field goal. I gladly took that 4.5 on Sunday because I'm with you that I think Duke is, especially because everybody's going to laugh, and it cost me some money the way that Miami game ended. Duke kind of getting run off the field late. It was absurd. But don't forget that Duke got ran off the field late because Duke was so stinking competitive against Miami for 3+ quarters. That deserves more credit than it necessarily gets. This defense especially is underappreciated. Manny Diaz has kept the thing rolling.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's a rough situation, but that's kind of in the range of plausible outcomes when you're a 20-point, you know, a 3-score dog that the team's going to run away with it. And that's exactly what happened. And they put up some interesting fronts and some interesting looks and really were quite annoying to a very good Miami offense. So I do think that carries over. I think Manny Diaz will kind of have them off the mat and like them as the underdog there for sure.
I really like that one. And it's important to note that the only thing, and maybe this is what we're missing, and this is not numbers, this is very intangible. NC State 5-4, home favorite. This is their chance to become bowl eligible at home. That's not something we can bake into the numbers, but it is worth noting, especially because the remaining schedule is at Georgia Tech and at North Carolina. If NC State wants to go bowling, it might need to get it done right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is that motivation factor you want to take into account for sure. I do wonder, Douglas, why every team doesn't get motivated for every game. Why don't you just flip the motivation switch for every game and then you win all your games?
Well, I know it's been a minute since you were an 18 to 23-year-old, but sometimes it's hard to predict how 18 to 23-year-olds' moods and mentalities are going to be on any given Saturday. This is why we lose money so often in these gambits, because it's so – the next game that we're not going to discuss this, but our next game on my ledger to get to is Georgia-Mississippi. I don't want to figure out what 18 to 23-year-olds are going to be thinking on Saturday in Mississippi. It's going to be a confounding situation.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, and who knows. But I also am not – I'm going to stay far away from that game. That game makes me nervous. One I do like, speaking of teams that have played a little bit better as of late, I like Iowa against UCLA here. I think Iowa's offense is not amazing, but it doesn't have to be amazing. It just has to be not actively terrible, and it is decisively not actively terrible. They're in the 40s in EPA per play. That defense is still excellent, 11th in EPA per play overall. And UCLA's defense, a far cry from where it was last year, obviously, still 41st, but they're 66th on offense overall, 91st in rushing EPA per play. Iowa is 23rd in EPA per rush on defense there. So I'm just not sure there's going to be a lot for UCLA to do to move the ball consistently against this Iowa team. I think that Iowa can slow this way the heck down, make UCLA play their game, and just be way better than them at it.
I very much agree with you. I looked at the last 2 weeks of Iowa, and they scored 42 on Wisconsin. You know, one of those touchdowns, I think it was like a 12-yard touchdown drive. So let's call it a 35-point showing. They're 40 points against Northwestern. Let's call 24 of them legitimate. And that's not to take away from what the Iowa defense does, but we're here to praise the Iowa offense at the moment. 35 points and 24 points against Power 4 opponents, no matter what you want to say about Northwestern, it's still a Power 4 opponent. This is no longer the Brian Ferentz Iowa Hawkeyes.
Yeah, and you can opponent adjust and say, well, it's not that good, whatever. But like, they weren't doing that against those opponents last year. They haven't been doing that, and now they are doing that. They're consistently excellent in the special teams side of things, third in field position on offense, eighth in field position allowed on defense, and have just been really, really consistent. The third and fourth down success on offense is fundamentally like Iowa has a DNA, and they're going to convert those power situations. They're 54th in third and fourth down success rate on offense. And so I just like the consistency that they're doing. They're taking a clear step forward on offense, even as they are. There's much to be desired in terms of national competition and championship aspirations for the offense. But in terms of soundly beating opponents that you should beat, I think their offense is not actively hindering them anymore.
You mentioned their special teams rating, their field position rating. Those were always the case. This is why Iowa maintained. It's why Kirk Ferentz kept his job, because the special teams and the defense were always Iowa-ing. The difference is the offense. And to me, the difference is maybe entirely that we've learned Iowa works when you have a dual threat quarterback. Brandon Sullivan coming in for Cade McNamara may have shifted Kirk Ferentz's career, and I'm being dramatic with that. But if all Iowa was missing all along was a mobile quarterback, then shoot, Kirk, just start emphasizing that.
Right. I mean, we you let Deacon Hill walk. What do you? I mean, you had what you needed there. The dual threat quarterback. What else do you? What else do you need? But in all seriousness, again, I will say, kind of, this sounds like both sides of my mouth, but I think it's still very true. Shout out to UCLA for not being an abject disaster this year. Certainly disappointing. Certainly much worse than their defense was last year. But I think they've shown some signs of life and had some interesting moments. I do think Iowa beats them soundly, so I'm going to be on the favorite in this one too.
I'm seeing that number at 6.5. I also agree with you. And again, so did the market. This number was available at 5 and 5.5 on Sunday. Now we're up to 6.5. I have to wonder if this gets to the touchdown or even the touchdown and a hook this week. I do disagree with you in your praise for UCLA. I mean, Parker, look at your number. Look at your chart. Don't look at the numbers. Look at the chart. There is a lot of red on the UCLA side of this ledger. That defense and the net points and the net field position, a lot of the offensive rushing success rate. Look, they might have won some games and they've been consistently ahead of the spread because the spreads are so lopsided. UCLA is winning against the spread because they are 2-touchdown, 3-touchdown underdogs. That's not a compliment.
No, there's certainly a reason they're in that position. But, you know, close wins against Rutgers and Nebraska, it's easy to lose those games, I think, and have, you know, 3-5 is very, very different than 1-7, right? And just in terms of philosophy and overall motivation. So yeah, far cry from anything, you know, excellent going on there or even trending in the right direction. But I do think it speaks to the coaching staff that they were able to eke out wins against a Rutgers team that's in a pretty bad spot. And frankly, a Nebraska team that is a little bit more rudderless than many people expected this late in the season.
I was about to ask you, what do you see the difference here in going to Nebraska, touchdown underdog, and now hosting Iowa as a touchdown underdog? Where's the difference that you have this belief? Now, I was on Nebraska last week, so I obviously always doubted UCLA, but where is the difference that you are seeing? You know what? UCLA is not going to be able to keep up with Iowa, even though they did just keep up against a Midwestern, Big Ten team, defensive-driven as a touchdown underdog.
Yeah, Nebraska's defense has regressed a little bit this season from where they were. Last season, they were top 5, I think, in both explosive run rate and explosive pass rate allowed. That's a good thing. Fewer of those. And their defense is a little worse. And their offense just seems to not be gelling in the right ways. And they don't have that kind of next gear. And the way that Nebraska needed to win 2 years ago was they were going to play this hard-nosed defense. And then their offense was going to kind of push ahead and teams weren't going to be able to keep up. This year, because that defense is a little worse and because that offense has not been as consistent as they've needed, their sequencing is really off and they're kind of getting into these bad situations with timing and just kind of making mistakes where they're not in the game script that they're built to win for. Iowa is built for this game script of we're just going to go pound for pound, blow for blow, and we're going to come out on top. And I think that's where UCLA is going to struggle. Douglas, last week, UCLA had 9 penalties for 62 yards. Nebraska only had 2 for 15, and they still lost that game. The 2 turnovers obviously tell you a lot about what happened there and the timeliness of that. But I think the difference is that Nebraska's defense, not anywhere near as good as Iowa's, and their offense is higher ceiling, certainly, but definitely higher floor as well, and gives a lot more volatility into this matchup.
And when you start realizing, as I mentioned earlier, a quarterback who can run UCLA, like you've mentioned, is susceptible to that. All right, I'm starting to see some thought process here. Before I kick you out of here, before I let you get on with your week, I want to call you out, and I'm being facetious. You're not going to back Utah for the peak of comedy, hosting unbeaten BYU. Let's throw the Big 12 in a true and utter chaos.
Yeah, I mean, it would be very funny, but I think also that just makes Colorado getting to the Big 12 championship and the playoff that more likely. So I don't know what the football gods are going to decide about that per se. I can't necessarily back that overall. Utah's offense is just very hard to trust in any way, shape, or form. Given that BYU has basically said, hey, on net, we're as talented as our opponents, you know, more talented in some ways, but we're as talented as our opponents. We're going to just sit back and let you make mistakes and take advantage of them. Utah's middle name this season is make mistakes. And now it's just hard for me to even see a game script where, aside from Utah throwing the kitchen sink and looking like an offense they have not looked like in seasons now, I'm really struggling to see how Utah keeps this close. I have this by, what, 13 or something?
15.5.
15.5.
And again, your projected points are always with heavy disclaimers. And the Vegas number, last I checked, is only 3.5 or 4.5. I think it moved up to 4.5 on Monday here. And indeed, it is now at 4.5. But yeah, you've got that by 2 touchdowns more.
Yeah, that's rough.
I like the way you described BYU season. To me, it's how I play ping pong as an uncle. Look, I'm not good at ping pong, but nephew, you're going to make a mistake before I do. So I'm just going to keep lobbing this ball over the net and wait for you to get angry at me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think the more hyped Utah comes out for this game, the more BYU is going to be able to exploit Utah's penchant for making mistakes. That being said, Utah's defense is still fine. They're 40th in EPA per play, like very consistent. But I'm going to need to see if we look back on Saturday night and look at this game and Utah covered, let alone won, we're going to see a Utah offense that looked like nothing we've seen all season, or we're going to see a deep defensive performance that is like everything everyone's been saying about BYU has been true. They just have not faced a real defense all season.
We're going to be talking about like a 9-6 kind of
something
comedy.
Just very odd. Yeah.
Which, hey, that might sound boring. That might sound slow. To me, that's an entertaining thing that the world doesn't appreciate enough. Our corporate cousin, the NFL, never delivers 9-6 drama like that, that we so thoroughly appreciate. I hope that's what we get.
Me too. I'd root for a pitcher's duel on this one. It'd be a lot of fun.
All right, Parker, thanks again for jumping in today early, making my life a little bit easier. Try to find some way to relax this week and avoid some of the stress, and I'm sure I'll talk to you throughout the week.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.
Andrew, we should now recap our bets, but before we recap our bets, let's again remind the world we will be live at 9 a.m. Eastern on Saturday morning on the Covers YouTube channel. You and I and Covers will tweet it out extensively. Like and subscribe to College Football 134 to show us you're getting this Tuesday value long before that Saturday show. Andrew, do you want to recap our bets? We will get out of here to enjoy our Tuesday as best we can given current circumstances.
For sure, buddy. So I'm starting with Parker Navarro. That is Ohio quarterback, 75 plus rush yards at plus 110 value. We've also got our Georgia and Mississippi 20 under 27.5 for our SEC first half under of the week. Georgia State, James Madison over 54.5, and Utah team total under 17.5.
My bets began with an impromptu. You can tell it's impromptu when we don't even have a banner for it. Impromptu LSU moneyline plus 124 against Alabama, taking Minnesota -6 at Rutgers. That's a Darius Taylor thought process. Taking the Florida team total under 13.5 at Texas. Producer Jameson, I did not do that to spite you. I did that because without DJ Lagway, Florida needs to just shut that game down and get out as best it can. And in an actual heel turn, taking South Carolina by 3.5 at Vanderbilt. That is how you take a heel turn. Andrew, I think that does it for us until Saturday morning.
Yeah, I actually just said 54.5. It's 53.5 for that Georgia State JMU game. I made a misspoke there. So 53.5, not 54.5.
As long as you
catch it. I hate your heel turn.
As long as you catch it, who's going to complain? You love my heel turn. You love it very much. That is Andrew Cayley at @Covers_Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer @D_Farmer. We will see you early on Saturday morning.